Steve Stoke.
Hello.
White Sox analyst for NBC Sports Chicago.
People don't realize that wrapped in that very small body, has got the hands and wrists and forearms of giants.
Former Cy Young winner.
Steve Stone is in town as a broadcaster with White Sox Television. Of course, he set the Orioles franchise record with 25 wins and winning the Cy Young Award in 1980.
Predictor of outcomes.
They've been trying to keep a lot of pitches away from Jose Abreu tonight. I'm thinking this is a really good matchup with him and Otero. Let's see if he gets careless with one.
In the air left field. Back at the warning track. It is gone!
Steve Stone with Dan Bernstein and Lalo Rahimi on 670 The Score.
Let's talk some baseball with Steve Stone. You can find him on Twitter at Steve Stone, the White Sox TV analyst and Cy Young Award winner. Joins us on the Score Hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. What's up, Stoney?
How you doing, Dan? Hi, Layla. Everything okay there?
No, Stoney, no, it's not. I don't like the Sox record against Yale Central. It's 6-11. I think it should be better, as we've probably established. And there's dissension amongst the ranks. We heard about what happened with Ozzie Guillen. Video was tweeted from the postgame show with Ozzie talking about the lineups. We've seen many of them. We saw Tim Anderson's reaction last night. He's since deleted his tweet, but it just makes me think that there's some dissension among the ranks.
Well, as far as dissension is concerned, here's the thing that usually happens in baseball. You might remember some very good Oakland A's teams. They won the World Series in 72, 73, 74. They literally had a fight in the locker room just about every day. They didn't like one another. They didn't get along particularly well, but they were an astonishing baseball team who happened to win most of the time. They carried that on for another year or so, and they were still pretty good. But I've never seen great chemistry on a losing team. And really, when you talk about bad chemistry, if it's a winning team, nobody really cares. So the object of these guys, the reason they're getting paid a very nice salary, is to go out and play. When it's your turn to hit, because your name's in the lineup, you hit. When it's your turn to get the baseball, whether it be in a relief role or a starting role, your job is to get people out. And so I think that most players can rise above whatever it is they have going in that locker room. I think it's a convenient excuse, but this is a game that has a lot of excuses. And they're up there. All you have to do is grab one and pull it down and say, hey, well, this is good. This is the reason why I'm not doing as well as I should. When in reality, look in the mirror. If you're not doing as well as you should, change something and get it done, because this game pays off on results. From the coaching staff, the managerial ranks, the players' ranks, the front office ranks. Results are the only thing that matter.
Steve, I'm old enough to remember when a certain team in 2004 began its implosion late in the season, and that implosion involved taking umbrage with what a certain team broadcaster was saying about players. And it was indicative, maybe more so after the fact than we knew, about the way emotions were being pulled in some wrong directions and were being improperly channeled. Does this remind you of that at all, or is this different? And if so, how?
Well, I think it's considerably different, because I think that the, let's say the ownership, I believe, has the backs of people who are involved with broadcasting this particular team, or the coaching staff, or the manager, anything along those lines. That was an era of Cub baseball where it didn't seem like anybody wanted to take responsibility for the collapse of their ball club. What I said basically was that there's 25 guys in this team that live in houses with no mirrors, because if they want to see who exactly is to blame for this underperformance, it would be the person they're looking at. Each and every one of those players. And so we ran afoul of that and didn't get a whole lot of backing. That was Chip Carey and I. Didn't get a whole lot of backing from either the front office, certainly not the manager, certainly not the general manager, and that was just one of those things. But everything happens for a reason. I mentioned to Dusty at the time, Dan, that this team is good enough to win the World Series because of that pitching staff. It was terrific. And they had some really good players. They had brought in Derek Lee. He was a very good first baseman. They had some very good players on that team, and I thought they literally could win the World Series. But I told Dusty, if he doesn't get his guys concentrating on the field, because it's those guys with the other uniforms, those are the guys that are beating you. nothing that Chip Carey and I are saying upstairs is affecting what happens on the field. So get back to thinking about baseball. Get back to trying to beat the hell out of the other team. And don't worry about what's being said because it doesn't affect anything. But they, for some reason, couldn't do that or couldn't understand it. And so as I told Dusty, you can be with one of the 8 that goes on or one of the 22 that goes home. They chose to just ignore a lot of things, and they became one of the 22 that went home with a really good baseball team. This is, to me, this feeling is completely different here. I think this is just a team kind of struggling to find their identity. And quite obviously, when you don't hit, when you're not scoring runs, everything else is magnified. And that's what's happened. This is a team that really hasn't hit the way it was supposed to hit, the way it should be hitting. They're not hitting. So consequently, you miss a relay throw, you make a critical error, or you ground into a double play, whatever the case may be, in a close ball game, and the Sox have played an inordinate amount of close games, it's going to show up.
I also think it's interesting that for a team that doesn't hit and doesn't walk, we're seeing a lot of the difference-making hits come through with two outs. We saw that with Jose Abreu, that 3-2 count. He had two outs yesterday that ends up being the difference maker in that first game. The two-out hitting seems to be there when it's needed, but it's just the inconsistency and the lack of walks that when you put it all together, it's a shame that it's playing out this way.
Well, what's kind of interesting is what a learned baseball man told me many years ago. He said, you know, when you're having a great year, everything is terrific. The food tastes better. Your family is doing great. Everything's just sailing right along. That's a year like the New York Yankees are having this year. When you're having a terrible year, you realize your ball club is not good, so you don't get frustrated by losing to teams who are better than you. And so that's easy to accept. But the most difficult thing to accept is a 500 season. And the reason is every team believes they're going to be much better than that. And right now this team is at 500. So I think the team is going to be better than that, but they're going to have to show that to the American League and to a certain extent the National League. Right now they haven't shown it yet, but look, Abreu hitting is one of the keys to this team. Grandal hitting is one of the keys. When they don't hit, the team doesn't score very much. When they do hit, the team seems to do okay. So I think just like it turns off, as far as the offense is concerned, maybe it can turn on. But again, that remains to be seen.
What did you see from young Davis Martin in his major league debut?
Saw a pretty good changeup. I mean, you know, he comes in, probably never expecting to get a major league start, pitches 5 innings, give up just 1 run. I thought it was outstanding. I liked the way he moved the ball around. I was watching the game, and I was thinking to myself what pitch I would throw. I thought maybe there was a couple of pitches that that I wouldn't have gone with because I thought he had the hitter set up for one thing or another. I don't believe he was calling his own game, so that's a product of maybe not knowing this guy as well as they should, but all things considered, I thought the changeup was great. I thought he was able to spot a lot of his pitches, so it was encouraging. I don't know, you know, what his future is going to be, but at least for one ball game in Kansas City, he was pretty good.
Sorry, Steve, I turned my mic off for a second. Sometimes you have to clear your throat. We saw Dylan Cease again with nine strikeouts, and right now leading the major leagues in strikeouts by a pretty considerable margin. What do you think of the mixing of his pitches he's able to do right now in each individual at bat that is leading to keeping the hitters off balance in such a way?
He's just coming of age. I mean, he's got just overwhelming stuff. We've been talking about that for a while. And this year, it looks like all of that stuff and all of his pitching smarts and what he's able to do, they're all coming together and making him going to be one of the top starters in the major leagues. That's what holds a lot of promise. Because when you take a look at, just call it the top four, because nobody knows what's going to be with the fifth starter. But the top four in no particular order. I mean, you'd like to go to war with these guys. Lynn's going to come back and hopefully be the guy we remember from last year. Giolito is throwing the ball much better now. And then you have Kopech and you have Cease. Those four literally can beat anybody. We saw some wonderful pitches out of each and every one of those guys. And hopefully, I say, Lance Lynn comes back and he's entirely the guy we saw last year. Maybe benefiting from this time off because he might not be as tired late in the season. So I think that's terrific. To me, watching Cease pitch, I see what Kopech is going to be. To me, they're very similar pitchers. They have the big fastball. You know, you're talking about 97, 98. When they get the breaking stuff over, you can't hit either one of those guys. And as far as the changeup is concerned, for both of them, the changeup is a work in progress. But between curves, sliders, and fastballs, they both have very, very good stuff, sometimes bordering on great stuff. And that's why I think this starting rotation is going to be awfully good. But we'll get to something later I want to talk about. But go ahead, ask whatever you'd like.
Wait, what do you want to talk about?
What I want to talk about is the configuration of a baseball team that's pretty interesting. And, you know, maybe because we have a back-to-the-future game, contact is coming back into play, stolen bases are coming back into play, when we thought that was going to be it with the true outcome of baseball, walk, strikeout, or home run. Now we're seeing teams having more contact hitters, teams doing a few more things, certainly running. But the New York Yankees are an example of a team that kind of understood a bit about what baseball was and maybe will be coming up, and that is there's three positions you have to have great defenders. Those positions are catcher, shortstop, and center fielder. Sox have an elite defender in center field, but they went for offense. They went to build their team for offense at positions historically are defensive positions. I mean, look, if you have Johnny Bench behind the plate who can hit and throw and block and call, that's one thing. But if you don't have him, I feel you err on the side of defense. Look what the Yankees have done. They got Higashioka and they've got Trevino. Both of these guys are exceptional defensive catchers. Call very good games, can block it, call it, catch it, and throw it. Then they went and got a shortstop in Connor Falefa, who is pretty much a defense-first guy. He has a gold glove. And he's not going to hit any home runs, which is unusual for the Yankees. As far as center field is concerned, when Judge is out there, he's pretty good. Hicks is out there, he's very good. They have taken those three positions. Even if they, I mean, if they have to sacrifice some offense, I view Judge as a right fielder, but he can play center. So I think what the Sox have done in the configuration of their ball club, they've gone with offense first in a lot of positions. Now, if you do that and the offense doesn't click, then you have a bit of a problem, and that's, I think, one of the things that's happening. But if you look at what is the Yankee model this year, you'll see Cashman and his assistants have done a really nice job making over that baseball team on a fly without spending a great deal of more money than they already were committed to.
Here's what's funny is you bring that up. I look at FanGraphs and I look at some of the advanced defensive metrics, particularly defensive runs above average for team. Of the 30 teams in MLB, the White Sox are dead last, the bottom of the barrel in defensive runs above average. So we had Scott from Davenport, Scott Lindholm, check to see how that correlates to success or lack thereof. Since this stat has been kept in the late 1990s, there's never been a team that's won the World Series while being last in this stat. Only four teams have made the playoffs. All four of those teams were the Yankees, with Derek Jeter at their shortstop. And it means that you can overcome it, but it takes a remarkable confluence of other circumstances to be arguably the worst defensive team in the league by this measure and still able to make the playoffs, and it takes World Series championship off the table. So if you have a catcher that can't catch and you have a shortstop, you have your most important infield position that can't really pick it up, you're only going to go so far.
Well, look, I personally are very much in favor of the defense-first catcher because the catcher's handling on a daily basis, he's handling your most valuable commodities, and that's your pitching staff, both out of the bullpen and in the starting rotation. We mentioned the Yankees' two catchers. They're both defense-first catchers. I do believe that Houston is winning with Maldonado behind the plate, who's pretty much a defender because he doesn't hit very much. He'll hit on the occasional home run, but that's not much. But I think that you do have to catch the ball unless you're planning to average six runs a game and get the occasional eight every now and then. If you can do that, you can overcome a defense that's less than stellar. If you can't do that, that defense is going to have a bright light shined on it on a daily basis. But I look at how a good defensive catcher, a good handler of pitchers, and to do that, you have to be a very good psychologist as well as a catcher. But those guys who can do that stay around the game for a long time because they're handling the team's gold, their pitching staff. Look at the Yankees staff from last year to this. Look at the ERA. Look at the bullpen ERA. And you'll realize that they're benefiting from having a couple guys behind the plate that are pretty good defensively.
I want to go back to where we started, and that was with the disagreement between Ozzie Guillen and Tim Anderson, and more the substance of it than the story of the conflict. All Ozzie was saying, essentially, and I didn't think it was really that big a deal. He said, look, like this is, you know, Bobby Cox always said, use your best when you got to use your best. And if you're trying to step on the neck of a divisional opponent, don't presume anything. Don't presume we're going to win this game because it's our turn to win. Don't presume that because we're projected to win 95 games, we're going to win those games. Saying you got your guys there for a reason. Use your guys and win those games. And when you talk about the White Sox identity, and we talk about waiting for everybody to meet the back of the baseball card numbers, and this should be this, and this should be that. At some point, you run out of time to wait. Should the White Sox, I don't want to say be pressing, but should there be a little bit less entitlement and a little bit more, it's hard to have urgency in baseball, and I understand that, but a little bit more awareness of we need to do everything we have to do all the time around the edges to win these games right damn now.
Well, I do believe that you can't concentrate on yesterday and tomorrow hasn't happened yet. So you have to do everything you can on a daily basis to, one, make your team better, and, two, make yourself a better player. And so when I got to Baltimore from some teams that were okay in the White Sox, not great, and I'd been with the Cubs, I'd been with San Francisco, we had one great team with the Giants, but I always thought what was best for me, by definition, would be best for the team. Because it was best for me, I would perform better, and then consequently the team would reap the benefits. But I found out when going to a winning organization, the Orioles were at that point, that's a flawed assessment. That they knew what was best for the team, by definition, would be best for me. And it worked out exceptionally well, and that's kind of what happened. So I think at this point, when a team is not doing quite what they would like to do, what I think is that it's got to come internally, and every guy has to ask themselves, am I doing on a daily basis everything I can to get better and to help this baseball team? Am I doing something that is destructive to me or something that will make me better? And if each and every player can ask that on a daily basis, I think the team will be better off. But right now, this team was put together to score a whole lot of runs, and they're not doing it.
Steve Stone, strong stuff today. Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay, take care. Have a good rest of the show.
Thanks, Stoney.
That is Steve Stone. We had some important Chicago Bears talking yesterday. Matt Eberflus and Lucas Patrick, your new guy among
them. I
think
he's our new people's head coach.
There he is. You got to have one, right? Well, they talked.
I miss you, Jason Peters.
They talked about everything that is facing this team right now. And we hang on these words right now because we haven't heard from these new people. And let's overanalyze them next on The Score.
Layla Wednesday with Dan Bernstein. Middays on The Score.
You know, we play on the hits principle.
Get used to the hits principle.
Name
Learn
this
it.
Song.
I don't know this song.
Ben's watching 2 Chainz. You know how I feel about 2 Chainz.
I know.
Perseverance pays off.
We have to learn the hits principle, know the hits principle, be the hits principle, and make the hits principle what
or
we do.
Or get hits like 2 Chainz.
Well, Matt Eberflus believes in that. It is his watchword. It is his guide to football life. And he was talking yesterday because finally this is OTAs. There are vets there. This isn't just the rooks. There are material players there at Halas Hall doing football things. And I'm always interested to hear how he talks about his quarterback. His quarterback right now is Justin Fields. And this is what Matt Eberflus said about Fields' leadership.
I've seen just develop day to day, just keep getting better and keep, you know, learning the system. And now he's starting to take control, you know, in terms of, you know, getting guys lined up, helping guys after the play. You need to do it this way, you need to do it that way. And he does it in a good way. You know, the number one thing, one of the things we talked about first day is respect. We have to respect each other. So you have to be able to look each other in the eye and tell the truth. You have to be able to do that. So, and that's what he does. And he does it in a respectful way, in a challenging way. We're going to get better. And that's what he's done, and he's going to continue to do that.
That's kind of odd. I mean, I guess I get it.
Do we really need to tell a second-year quarterback who was a starter at Ohio State about respect?
Would you presume that it would otherwise be disrespectful? Or was that something that you felt you had to do coming in, that you heard needed coaching? I'm sure it's fine, right?
I don't know why that relationship wouldn't be professional already.
Is he maybe that's just his way of complimenting him, saying this is something that's important to us, and he's doing what we want him to do in that way. And I don't know. It just, I haven't quite heard. It's an interesting thing to say at this time about, look, he's the quarterback.
Yes.
Right.
And to me, that's one of those that's a given. So I found it curious that that was what was said about him. At least you know what the expectation is. I would assume he's meeting that expectation if that's what it is. Seems pretty baseline.
Yeah. And he was also asked about the schedule and what it means that their bye week is week 14 and how that sets up and what his level is of concern is about the way the season is set up before him.
Doesn't matter. It does not matter. I could care less.
Doesn't matter your buys in December. That's the latest you could possibly have.
It doesn't matter. It is what it is, and we got to play the schedule. So, but you look at it as a football coach. What you do is you look at it and you say, okay, you know, there's certain breaks in the schedule when you have a bye week that late. Well, when can you get the guys a break? You know, and the scheduling of it's very important because you want to get your guys fresh into the game. So you're certainly looking at that. We're putting that together as we speak. You know, the training camp schedule and what we're going to operate during the season. So, but in terms of your question, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. You got to play the schedule. You see what I'm saying? But you do look at it. It's an important thing.
Well, pick one. The scheduling of it is very important. It's an important thing, and it doesn't matter. Both of those things can't be true.
Well, Jason Leisure asked him to clarify because of the bye week issue.
But you can't say it doesn't matter. It's couldn't care less. Not could. I hate that.
I could care less.
I know. But I get it. I know what you're saying. And I like that. I like a coachy coach being like, it doesn't matter. We'll play whoever. I'll take his and beat your and beat his and whatever you want to do.
Reverend.
And the old Bum Phillips line. But I get that. But you can't say it's vitally important to the scheduling and all that. But it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
It's very important and it doesn't matter. What?
I could care less.
But it's very important. Okay, fine, whatever. Well, we know he got hired because he's going to run a tight ship. He got hired because of discipline. And there was a skirmish that broke out. And you don't do that. He doesn't want skirmishes because skirmishes lead to selfishness, and that can lead to being stupid. And he doesn't want the Bears to be stupid.
From our vantage point, it looked like there was a little skirmish at one point during the practice with Lakayle London, and I couldn't see who the other player was. But what is your philosophy on that kind of thing, whether it is to be some extracurricular, if I saw it right?
The bottom line is this, is that you have to work together to practice. This is Bears on Bears, and we're not going to tolerate that here at the Bears. So that's a simple message. I have no problem delivering that message to anybody. So it's they understand that. And because it's what happens is during the course of football, okay, there are things that happen, right, against your opponent. You're playing whatever, opponent A, B, or C, doesn't matter. You have to have emotional control, okay, during the course of the game. It's got to be a boxer's mentality because you can't go let your anger get to you because why? Then you'll foul, right? You'll make a stupid thing after the play, and now it's hurting our football team and hurting our chances to win. So that, to me, is what we have to learn, right, all of us, right, during the course of training camp okay? And then even back in this part of this. So it was a very small, it was a couple shoves, and that was it, and it was no big deal. But, again, I said the message after the practice, say, hey, we got to make sure, you know, that was real small, but that can escalate into something during a game where it's going to cause a penalty. We don't want that.
Can I ask something?
Yes, please.
Aside from what I heard with the drop, which is greatness in and of itself.
Okay.
Did CJ Gardner-Johnson influence the Bears coaching search? Because it sure sounds like he did.
Yes.
And if that's the case, did the same loss beat you not one, not two, but now three times?
Yep.
Because I really hope CJ Gardner-Johnson did not decide the Bears coaching search.
Anthony Miller, and this is that whole discipline, that whole stop being stupid. Angelo Blackson. Any number of times, a lot of the post-whistle stuff.
Well, the penalties by themselves were a different issue because the Bears were penalized a ridiculous amount. The pre-snap penalties, I think, were the result of a terrible offensive plan. But CJ Gardner-Johnson is the only person I was thinking about when that whole line of answer was told to Mark Grody.
But that the rhetorical crutch of like, right, and okay. Okay, right. Speaking to you, okay. Right. Mm-hmm, right. It's like, I don't have to validate you. Just say it. I'm listening.
Colloquialisms and you are not friends at times.
No, just talk. Just say what you have to say.
That's how people think out loud. You get paid to talk.
I know. Okay. Okay. Well,
I swear CJ Gardner-Johnson had a hand in the coaching search. That's not a good thing.
Discipline. Toughness.
Yeah, those are good things.
In the course of football. Not the course of a football game. The course of football. The larger being and oneness and existence of football.
You don't love the game enough.
I must not.
I love ball.
Stop it. Okay.
So good that it goes back to Trustman and goes back to Dan's unhappy place.
No, I don't know. I think Eberflus is going to be a hell of a lot of fun.
Trustman really is your mirror.
Ugh. That's a bad. Can I break that mirror? I don't want to see that.
No, that's what happens when you make your judgments and then you get the coach you want.
We're fired up about that.
Head up in Canada.
He is not my mayor.
You have declared Lucas Patrick the people's coach?
Yeah, I just like what he has to say. He gives interesting takes. And frankly, the offensive line development on this team is the only real piece of direction we've seen so far.
And here's what he had to say about his quarterback, Justin Fields.
Yeah, he's young, so he likes to have the juice and the energy, and he's got a live arm. I mean, there were a few throws he made today where that ball just, you know, it's like it keeps getting faster in the air. And he's soaking everything up, like whether it's coaches, me, or you know stuff he's telling me. I mean, it's really good. I mean, he's couldn't have a better start to working relationships. I mean, I have pretty high expectations. You don't get drafted as high as he does, you know, in the National Football League just for you know kind of having a wet noodle or you know slow feet. Like he's really talented. I thought he was going to be really good, and he's exceeding my expectations.
I think he makes a good point when he says the ball gets faster in the air because people criticized his holding on to the ball too long, but perhaps there was more to it than that. Patrick seeing something that maybe we're not.
The idea of a ball getting, he said it looks like it gets faster in there. We know that's physically impossible. It's like the idea of a rising fastball. The moment it leaves your hand, it's slowing down.
Okay.
Well, some pitches are faster than others.
That's correct, but the moment it leaves your hand, it's decelerating.
Yeah, I figured he just meant the ball has more zip on it.
Yes.
Faster than it was previously.
Yes, yes. That I think that's what he's saying, and we will be we'll be keeping an eye on what he says and how he says things. But this is the what. What? What did I do?
You know what you're doing.
I'm not. What did I say? Clean slate. Clean slate. I'm Matt Eberflus will be judged by how this team performs. All that matters is that they love him and listen to him and hang on his every word. And
you're
and
just a bad liar. See? Who won money playing poker with Dan at Camp One Step? Was it the entire room?
Why doesn't Dan play, right? Yeah, because I would get my cards and be like, damn it! They think, well, maybe he's bluffing. No, he's not bluffing. He's just stupid. So I'm going to find Matt Eberflus immensely entertaining. That is not a lie. And I really, really hope that he's a good coach for these Chicago Bears. But before he walked in the door, I'd never heard of him.
Benefit of the doubt.
Yes. Yeah, that's fine. Let's go. Let's go Bears. Let's go win this thing. Let's go out there and win four or five games.
Win the points.
Win the football points in the course of football. Yes.
I really like Velus Jones. He's quite the showman. What are you laughing about? Your guilt inside?
This weird text is 630. Leave the coach alone, you guys. You would find something to make fun of Jesus for. Nice writing.
What, his sandals weren't Birkenstock? I actually get what he's saying. Do we really need to bring Birkenstocks into this?
And it's also not hard to make. I mean, this one's kind of low-hanging fruit. It's not like we're really working hard to find things to have fun with. What do you think we do for a living, numbnuts? How many coaches do we have to go back to
we're
here?
We're supposed to make jokes. We're like those two old Muppets on the Muppets from Star Wars.
Dave Wanstead's in here, you know, once a week. Ask him how that goes.
I miss Wani.
Yeah, he'll be around. He's, you know what? He's on a boat.
With Tony Wise and Troy Aikman and Jimmy Johnson? That looked amazing.
It had to be Rich Dalrymple. Like, I think by law, that crew is not allowed to get together without Rich Dalrymple.
Rich on the boat?
It had to be.
I don't think he was.
Well, then they were hiding him. He was downstairs.
Troy Aikman Twitter.
Had to be. Bears on Bears.
We also need to take this time to... I'm really sad for Tariq Cohen.
Oh, God, brutal.
Yes.
Oh.
We got distracted, but it was something we talked about in our pre-show meeting.
Oh.
And
oh, man.
It was 8 days prior to him getting injured yesterday where he talked about and released that essay in the Players Tribune about the trauma he's gone through with his family. I strongly recommend you read it, especially now. And he talked about the severity of his knee injury, which might have led to, according to Adam Schefter, the reason why he ends up, unfortunately, rupturing his Achilles.
And everybody knew it, and everybody saw it. Rick Camp showed me the video near the end of the show yesterday, and we couldn't really go with it because it was unconfirmed. It was like in a Reddit thread somewhere, and now it is confirmed.
Right. Schefter tweeted about it yesterday, but it wasn't even so much the video without the sound. The sound is horrifying.
I don't want to watch that.
And I think Jarrett Payton put it really well. Let's not always go picks or it didn't happen, but Tariq Cohen deserves a good thought from us all.
Yeah, he's due for some better luck. He really is for everything. After reading that Players Tribune article, it's just like I had to take some time to get myself together after reading that. I really did. It was that emotional and sad.
He deserves us all sending a little positivity his way.
630 texter says, I've been singing Bears on Bears to the tune of Girls on Film for the last 18 hours. Bears on Bears. Yeah, that is. I like that. We should get a t-shirt that says Bears on Bears. Although,
No.
That's right. We probably shouldn't.
No.
Because that would be an unintended meaning, I think, wouldn't it? Well, you can't have fun with anything these days anymore, can you?
414, is Bernstein's hell being in a room with Trussman and Boylan speaking not properly English?
When we come back,
nailed it.
I know we played some of what Chicago's own Patrick Beverley said on national TV the other day, but not all of it yet. And there's more because he doesn't care. What did you call him? If Joe Cowley actually played in the NBA,
Patrick Beverley is the Joe Cowley of NBA players.
You gotta love football. Let me say it again. You don't have to love football. You gotta really love football.
I know you guys played some Patrick Beverly already of him being on ESPN. I know. But you know how I feel about Patrick Beverly. Appreciated working with him in Houston tenfold. Appreciate his sense of trolling humor. And really did not expect him to go there when he was talking about Chris Paul.
Ain't nobody worried about Chris Paul when he played Phoenix Suns. Nobody in the NBA.
Well, what did I just say, though?
And I'm just letting you know how NBA players feel and think.
I believe you, but what I'm saying
he's
is...
He's finessed the game to a point where he gets all the petty calls, all the swipe-throughs at the end. I mean, this guy is out, man. We gonna be honest? We want to be really honest?
Yes.
He should have fouled out. He should have fouled out. The last game, too. You see the replay against Brunson. Hit him on the shoulder. Hit him in the mouth. Ref don't call anything. If that's me, oh, review it. Oh, flagrant one. If that's him, they don't call it. So let's not get it twisted, man. He should have fouled out. He can't guard. He literally can't guard.
He can't guard. He can't guard. Chris Paul can't guard anybody? Is that what you say?
Did you see that? No, he can't. Everyone knows that.
Excuse me. No. I don't know that. I haven't heard anybody tell me that.
Because you haven't suited up. You know guys don't like to tell you all the truth. You know that. Because they're scared. They're scared what you're going to take with it.
He's right about that. They will lie. He's honest. They will lie. That is true. He's not lying about that.
Man, CP can't guard nobody, man. Everybody in the NBA know that. Everybody know that.
He can't guard anybody.
What we call them? Cone. You know what you do with cones? Like when in the summertime, you got a cone. You make a move. What does the cone do?
Stay still.
Exactly. Yeah. He's a cone. Stop playing, man. Everybody
that right.
knows that. Everyone knows that. It's just y'all don't want to accept it because
no, I don't accept that.
I don't.
I'm saying again, if you're taller than him, you're saying you can shoot over him. Obviously, that's
but
an
give
issue.
Him the but, Ben Simmons slander. Give him the PG 13 slander. Give him the slander that you give everybody. Come on, Steve.
I mean,
boy, yeah.
Went in, and it upset a lot of people.
And the fact that NBA Paint, the moment he said that, if you get a chance to follow at @NBA_Paint, it is hysterical. And they immediately snapped into action and put out a picture of a smiley face traffic cone with a number 3 on it. And you can get these at the moment they put it out as t-shirts. I mean, like the Phoenix Buns logo with the sad faced butt with the crying Jordan eyes in the Phoenix. It's so funny. It's just. Yeah, and you can get like hoodies and stuff. Oh, God.
But then you hear guys like Danny Green start talking. Then you hear people like Matt Barnes. I would be very interested to hear what Coby White thinks of this, knowing the relationship he has with Chris Paul. It seems like that fired up a lot of the NBA. Because then you hear what, for example, what Matt Barnes says the next day on Get Up when Barnes is saying, for him to make comments supporting his opinion about the Chris Paul and all that I respect, I totally do. But you go up there and you tell your NBA brother, you go up there and you tell the whole world that this man doesn't deserve his money when you were just in the NBA. What if someone said that to you? I appreciate the perspective and the request for professionalism. But do you think that's not being said amongst teammates if that's how they feel in a locker room and they're trying to win a game? Does he have a point?
Give Patrick Beverly all the microphones. All the time. We should be constantly hearing from him. Especially when he said, I was talking to one of my teammates about, I'm going to tell you, it was Paul George. Like, dude, no, you're not supposed
Paul might not feel good about that.
Paul George actually liked the tweet, by the way. It was an Instagram.
Did not.
He liked it. It was a tweet. It was on IG. He liked it. So Paul George obviously don't mind. They boys. So he don't care.
But one of my team, Paul George. Okay. If they don't care, like put him on all the time. You put him in between Kenny and Charles right now, whenever you can.
We see how on the court he's not afraid to go in. We see how on the court he's not afraid to ruffle feathers. His duel with Russell Westbrook is a decade old by now. But for him to go off, I think, on somebody who is not just somebody who gets the calls in the NBA, but has built really a legacy for himself in this league and a brotherhood amongst players is what I find interesting.
Lele, you brought up Matt Barnes. We actually have the cut of him talking about it.
Let's
what
hear
I
it.
Want to touch on real quick, RJ, is the disrespect I saw from Pat Beverly earlier today. You know, as reporters, you know, part of the media, we have a job to be critical, but I think there's a thin line between being critical and disrespecting. And I feel like what Pat Beverly did today to Chris Paul was completely disrespectful and out of the line. And Pat Beverly's talking like he's that guy. You're not that guy. Plain and simple. Chris Paul played terrible this year, and his numbers are still better than your career numbers have ever been. So I just think you have to understand, Chris is a 12-time All-Star. He played terrible. First time, all defense nine times, seven times first team all defense. He'll be a Hall of Famer. Pat Bev and I were similar type role players. They don't talk about us when we go. They're going to talk about CP3 when he's done. And I just think the disrespect we saw earlier today need to be checked because he was way out of pocket.
Oh, where? He's not wrong. If he can't guard, he can't guard. Maybe he used to be able to guard. But now he can't. That's all he's saying. He's not talking about Chris Paul 10 years ago. He's talking about him now.
You know what it made me sad about when he said that? It made me sad for Chris Paul as to how close he got to finally getting the finals last year. And this is of no disrespect to Giannis, who everybody loves in the league, and the team that took advantage of the opportunities that were in front of them last year in Milwaukee, which was what you're exactly supposed to do. That's what a champion is asked to do. And we saw the beast mode that he went into in the finals. But for how close Chris Paul got, and it makes me sad.
Because that's it. I mean, he the fact that he already has had to say he's not retiring, the reason why he knows that those questions are completely legit right now.
It also makes me, if you wonder why I get so angry about the window when I talk about the White Sox or what you think the Bears window might be, it's stuff like that.
Can't presume anything.
Nothing is handed to you.
You can't presume. You're not entitled. It's not your turn.
And how many times have we seen teams who we knew were going to be good get good earlier? Well, who are they eclipsing there? Because there has to be a loser for every winner. So who are they eclipsing? And that's, I don't know, that was the lasting impression of that for me. It wasn't just Pat Bev telling some truths. It was me thinking about the career of Chris Paul.
Transition with Lawrence Holmes is next on a Layla Wednesday on The Score.